This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
And I'm glad you could join us here on Sports Map Radio. It is Wake Up Call. It is a throwback Thursday today. Coming up in this hour, Super Bowl history lesson. We'll go back in time to the Super Bowls on this date. We'll also talk to Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South, one of the smartest SEC reporters around. Tennessee has hired Josh Heupel to be their new head coach. The former Central Florida AD has hired now the Central Florida head football coach. The optics aren't all that great, but Heupel is a good coach. But it's how well is it going to go down in Knoxville, and what challenges does he have for a Tennessee team that, man, won a national championship a million years ago, but since then has not been able to really settle on a successful head coach? We'll talk to him about that coming up this hour as well. We'll also, Good, the Bad, and the Dumb coming up in just a couple of minutes here in hour number two. Last night, a good basketball game between Philadelphia and the Lakers. Could be an NBA Finals preview. Sixers win 107-106. It ends the Lakers' perfect road record this season. And, you know, listen, it's real early in the NBA season, and sometimes you get a little nuggets of these games during the regular season that are good. There's some trends that go back and forth. I kind of liked the hype for this game. I think the Sixers at 13-6 now, have got themselves a very good team with Doc Rivers as the head coach. And the Lakers, of course, have not missed a beat since winning the title out of the bubble in Orlando. It's still, I know a lot of people are still like, hey, look, wake me up in March when we get closer and closer to this thing, you know, winding down towards the playoffs. But some of these matchups during the regular season have been really fun to watch. I mean, you've seen some of these already in games involving Milwaukee and Philadelphia, in games involving even a game like Boston the other night. It still provides some really good energy for the NBA that's still trying to figure out what it looks like in a, you know, post-bubble COVID world where these stadiums are empty and the arenas aren't filled. And it is hard to sort of build up a buzz when you're not showcasing and the place to be within a city. Coming up, the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue. It is Wake Up Call. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. As we continue, it is Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb here on a throwback Thursday. And let's get things rolling. The good of the day.
Good of the day, Peter Jackson.
Peter Jackson, remember, what's he doing?
Famed director of the Lord of the Rings trilogy,
yes.
For all of those who say, that name sounds familiar, but I can't place it.
Big-time director, Peter
yes.
Jackson.
He uncovered 56 hours of film for a new documentary he's making, which showcases that the Beatles' breakup was grossly exaggerated.
Really?
In fact, they had never been closer. At the time of their breakup.
Where did he find such footage?
In the archives. I had it, but I got to find it.
Yeah. That seems like that would be hard hide.
It was actually like from B-Reel or just some of the cutscenes from A Hard Day's Night.
And nobody's
from the film.
Nobody knew they had this kind of footage?
I guess they
they
had it, but I don't know, maybe just the idea that John and Paul were at each other's throats and it's all Yoko Ono's fault and blah 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 blah. I guess maybe that was more of a story. I don't really know why this never came to light.
Yeah, I think if you have 57
not A Hard Day's Life. It was on the film Let It Be.
If you had 57 hours of B footage that was just sitting around, I think some Beatles person would have been like,
"What
is this?" It was
that. It was, you know, just behind the scenes footage from, like, just raw video of them just hanging out and having
that's
a good
awesome. So he's putting something together here.
He's putting something together, a Beatles documentary that I guess is just going to focus on the breakup.
Wow!
Because he says there's one scene where they're all just kind of sitting there fooling around with each other. on the set of Let It Be. You know, they had already broken up, or they were on the verge of breaking up, because Let It Be was released after they had broke up as a band.
So what will be the new theory as to why they did it? Just to do it? Just to be like, we gotta do our own thing now?
Yes, maybe. You know, yeah, time expired.
God, even the Bee Gees broke up a period of time before they came back together as brothers.
I know. So, I think, I mean, maybe there was.
Bands do this.
There was probably a situation where they were planning on getting back together at some point, but John Lennon being murdered was kind of threw a monkey wrench in that plan.
Yeah.
I don't know.
excuse me. I always wondered. There was it's kind of a made-for-TV show or something about. Remember when Lorne Michaels on Saturday Night Live held up a check for $3,000 made out to the Beatles to come on? It was a kind of a gag. And he goes, "Give Ringo whatever you want, or don't pay him. We don't care. We just want." He's kind of making a play on getting the Beatles to have a reunion on Saturday Night Live. There was a story that Paul and John saw that and actually thought about taking a cab down to 30 Rock and actually surprising the show. I always thought,
fantastic.
Wouldn't that have been great if they had done that?
Yes, it would have been awesome.
I don't know if that's an urban legend or not, but there was kind of a thought that they both kind of went, wouldn't it be great? Let's go do that. Let's go catch a cab and let's go down there right now.
Yeah. I mean,
they were both in New York at the time.
We widely believe that, you know, Yoko Ono was the reason they all broke up. But they said, you know, in this footage that they have showed, they show that Yoko Ono and Linda McCartney were sitting there in the chair just joking with each other while the band was just fooling around.
Well, good for Peter Jackson.
So,
good.
We could trust him, right? Yeah. I mean, he's a great director.
Didn't Peter Jackson, and I'm taking a shot here, didn't he do the World War I colorization of the home movies that was on a year or two ago?
Hmm.
Do you know? I might have to look that up.
Yeah.
But he does good work, so I'll be looking forward to seeing this when it's finally released. What's the bad of the day?
Well, remember the video of the cougar chasing a hiker?
Yes.
We talked about that often.
Yes, I saw that, and I did see that video, and it was scary.
Yeah, now we have a new video.
Uh-oh.
A wild video coming to us from Romania of a skier heading down the slopes, and a bear is chasing him.
No way.
Yes.
That would be petrifying.
A bear is chasing him down the mountain. He was able to get away because he threw his backpack, and police are saying that's probably what saved him because, you know, then the bear became interested in what the backpack was all about.
Was it a downhill skier or a cross-country skier?
No, just a downhill skier. It's caught on camera by people who are going up in a chairlift.
So he is skiing down the mountain, and the bear is still fast enough to catch him while he's skiing down the mountain?
It's gaining on him.
Wow.
Because, I mean, he's not going like Olympic speed, like pointing the skis downhill and just flying. I mean, he's going back and forth down the mountain like any of us would do because we're not expert skiers. And the bear is just running straight.
Pizza, 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 french fry, french fry, french fry. Pizza, 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 french fry, french fry, french fry. That's how you ski. But that's amazing. Listen, they tell you this all the time, right? They say, if you see a bear, if you're in the woods, like in Alaska, and you see a bear, don't run.
Yep.
They'll chase you.
Curl up in a ball.
But here's the thing. You have to have real discipline to do that.
Okay. I do have an argument to that. Because do you remember the movie Revenant with Leonardo DiCaprio?
I did not see it, but
okay.
I heard it's good.
You should. Yeah, it is good. He did deserve an Oscar. I will give him that. He kind of did that, and the bear still mauled him.
Yeah.
And I think that's more true than... you know, just people say, all you got to do is just curl up in a ball. Don't try to outrun them because they're faster than you. Don't climb a tree because they're better climbers than you. Just curl up in a ball, get in the fetal position, and you should be fine.
Yeah, or they say, raise your hands and sing.
Really?
I'm not singing.
Do you a YMCA when
raise
your hands?
Yeah, they're saying if you make a noise, bear will go, I don't know what this is. I better not go near it. No, I think the bear goes, I can eat this person.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing, but I absolutely can devour this individual.
I'm bigger. I'm stronger.
Yeah.
I think the bear knows it. Yeah.
You know,
maybe to a cub, you can do that. Or, one of those smaller bears, like I think a sun bear is kind of small.
I just think if I run into the woods and there's a bear, I think I'm going to die. I think it's going to kill me.
Yeah,
like, there's nothing I can do to stop it.
I know.
So I just stay away from where bears are.
Because, I mean, I don't think you can hide behind a tree.
No, I don't think you can do
I
that.
I think it'll find you. It'll sniff you out.
No. You know, there was a documentary, Grizzly Man, about Timothy Treadwell, who lived in Alaska with the bears.
Yes,
remember
he made
that?
Friends with them?
Remember, he was like Mr. Chocolate, and he named all the bears, right? He was like, this is so-and-so, so-and-so. He had all the bears named, and he went up there every year forever. Every year he went up there, and he left, and he would go back, and he would see his bear friends, and he'd camp. And then one year, him and his girlfriend stayed a little too long, and they stayed at the wrong time. They were there in a year where there was drought problems or something was going on with the salmon.
Food issues.
The
yeah.
food issue, whatever makes the salmon not salmon-y, whatever conditions were that prevented the bears from devouring every fish in the river, that was when he decided to stay way past the get the hell out of here time. And him and his girlfriend were killed
yep.
by the bears. Now, the scary thing was his camera was rolling, but it got knocked down during the attack, so the camera picture, thank God, didn't show him and his girlfriend getting eaten by the bear, killed by the bear. But the camera did pick up the audio. And they say it is so terrifying that it has not been released to the public under any condition.
Oh, can you imagine just the horrific screaming?
The documentary director, Werner Herzog, wanted the audio for the documentary, not knowing how bad it was. Then they said, we'll let you listen to it, but you can't use it. He listened to it and said, I will never use that.
Can
it was so bad.
Probably haunts dreams to
probably will
day.
Haunt your dreams. Probably will haunt your dreams how horrifying and screaming must have occurred while that bear was attacking those two individuals. I thank God he had a backpack. It's all we could. Imagine being on a chairlift watching a bear devour a human being on the ski slope.
Well, that was the thing. I mean, you could hear everyone on the chairlift, like, you know, yelling at him because it almost appears like he doesn't know, but I think you know.
Yeah.
I think you would know. I mean, he's trying to get, because it doesn't, the weird thing about the video, it doesn't look like he's in a hurry to get down the mountain. But then I think about it, like, if I'm skiing, I just want to make sure that I'm upright the entire time.
Right.
I'm not a great skier because, you know, I've always lived in warm climates, so I don't.
Tuck those skis together and boogie down that
yeah.
hill.
But see, I figured if I did that, I'd wipe out.
And then the bear wins.
And then the bear wins.
That's right.
So I would be, you know, like you said, pizza, 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 french fry, french fry, french fry, all
right.
the way down
all
that hill.
All the way down.
Probably more pizza. Let's be honest.
All right. What's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day. We were talking about this during the break. I don't, for the life of me, understand what is going on with GameStop.
I don't either. I'm not a day trader, and I'm not even going to try to educate myself, but I really tried to figure this out.
As far as I know, is in layman's terms, a group of people on Reddit are doing exactly what Wall Street normally does, and Wall Street wasn't in on the event.
Right. Apparently a bunch of people on Reddit got together and bought AMC and GameStop and I think another play or whatever it was because they heard.
Also heard Tootsie Rolls now are getting into the
really?
Mix. Yeah.
They, I guess, got wind of the way stocks are manipulated so that you could short sell. I am speaking way above my head here.
Right.
Apparently they got wind of it and they said, you know what? Screw that. We're gonna do things that will make it better. And they got that stock 1,600%.
Yeah.
And those hedge funds lost millions of dollars, millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah. Basically, what one person said was this: is that they are doing exactly what all these Wall Street traders did during 2008 during the housing bubble.
Yes,
the bubble boom,
right.
The bubble burst.
Rooting for failure.
Yeah, and they got away with it, no problem. That remember we had Occupy Wall Street shortly after that because it was all them. It was just them saying, "Yeah, you know what? If we can manipulate the market, we're able to make millions of dollars," and that's exactly what they did.
They saw a trend and then they capitalized on the trend and said, "Oh, these loans are bad."
The main guy who spearheaded it, he invested $50,000 of his own money and then cashed out at $22 million.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It was one of that. So, yeah, so that became a fun story yesterday, but I guess Wall Street is now like, "Well, we're going to stop day trading." That's just not going to happen anymore.
They're trying to put a stop on it, but the problem is that they're putting a stop on the GameStop stock. So these guys are, that's why they went to AMC. That they're going to other places.
Yeah. I'll tell you right now, that genie's out of the bottle. It ain't going to calm down that day trading.
And stuff. Here's the other issue, because you have all these little apps now, like Robinhood and things like that, where people like you and I, who have no business doing it, can go in there and invest $10 and see what happens.
See what happens, yeah.
Because a lot of times, if you invest in stocks, they usually say, you need to invest $10,000. I'm not going to take you unless you're going to do high roller money.
Amazing.
So with these apps, you can do small amounts of money. And there's a lot of people, a lot of young people who are treating this as a fantasy sport.
Sure, sure, they are.
You know, as if it's, your FanDuel, if you will, or your any type of daily fantasy site that you go to.
Wild. Well, that was an interesting, I didn't have time yesterday to really dive into it.
Yeah.
But I feel like today I might just see if there's a couple articles to
might
explain
have to. I
this.
Might even, look at Robinhood and see, what's this about? Because if all these people are making a little bit of money, find that one stock that no one's talking about yet.
That's right.
It's like, maybe just roll the dice and see what happens.
All right. That's the good, the bad, and the dumb. We got Connor O'Gara coming up in just a few minutes. We'll talk to him about the Tennessee hiring of Josh Heupel and the situation there in Knoxville. When we come back, though, we'll talk Super Bowl history, a couple of Super Bowls on this date as we remember the biggest game in sports next on Sports Map Radio.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
It is a Throwback Thursday, 1986. On this date, the Space Shuttle Challenger exploded. I'm trying to remember this song.
It's one of those you might have to wait for the hook.
Is it Eddie Murphy, Party All the Time?
There it is, yes.
Oh, right. Eddie Murphy had a hit single. Hey, is your check engine light on? Don't ignore it. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today. Let their professional parts people scan your vehicle for free. They'll retrieve the codes, discuss possible solutions, even help you find the professional technician if needed. They'll help you find a reputable repair facility or service center near you, or you can visit O'ReillyAuto.com and click on Find a Repair Shop. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day.
Real quick, you know what my favorite thing about this song is?
What?
My mom bought the 45.
Oh, did she?
And so we would play it from time to time, as long as we remembered where that little disc thing was.
Is that one of those things where Eddie Murphy thought, I'm a big super, I can do anything I want?
Yeah, well, it was kind of a trend, right?
And, yeah.
Didn't Bruce Willis have a hit
around
this time,
too? Bruce Willis did something, the same thing, right? He was doing some musical thing.
I mean, it's a great dance song, yeah?
Yeah. Do you think Eddie Murphy looks back on this and goes, yeah, that was awesome, or is he embarrassed by it? I would think it's pretty good. It's still a good song. I don't think anybody complains about it.
No, it's an iconic 80s song.
That's right. Definitely it has an iconic 80s song.
You definitely got that synthesizer working for you.
We had talked about a couple of things for Throwback Thursday. Was We Are the World on this day?
Yeah, We Are the World. Thought
right
about
after
doing
the Grammys.
That. Yeah, in 85.
All the stars got together and sang for Hunger.
Sadly, Eddie Murphy wasn't a part of that.
He was not part of that. No, absolutely not.
If they had done it a year later, he probably would have been.
All right, a couple of Super Bowl dates. We do this every year during the Super Bowl time, kind of remember some good, fun Super Bowls on this date in history kind of thing.
And
not so fun. There were three on this date, January 28th. The first one was in 1990. It was Super Bowl 24, and it pitted San Francisco against Denver. And this might be one of the most forgettable Super Bowls because it was 55-10.
Oh, I was going to say it was a close game.
Yeah. This one wasn't as close as the year before when Montana hit John Taylor for the touchdown to beat Cincinnati. This game was over quick. It was an exhibition of the excellence of the 49ers. And poor John Elway, this is when he walked off the field going, man, am I ever going to win this thing? Three losses in 4 years to three different NFC teams. He caught the NFC Express at the wrong time.
Oh, John, just wait. Your time was coming.
Your time was coming. But Joe Montana was the MVP. I think he threw four touchdown passes. It was absolute cakewalk.
It's like what you said. It was a clinic.
Yeah, it was in New Orleans, and it wasn't even close. It was one of those games where you go, all right, moving on. Yeah, 49ers are the champs.
I don't remember this game at all.
Yeah,
the only thing I think I remember from this game was I remember I went with a friend to another friend's house to watch this game, and by halftime, we were all in the backyard playing football.
A
lot of the dads were in the backyard playing football, like throwing the ball around, because I think they were bored with it.
You were probably in a situation where you were going to find something else to do at your Super Bowl party.
Yeah.
Ping pong, basketball outside, this was whatever.
This was something that was just on in the background.
Exactly. On this date in 1996, the Dallas Cowboys beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 27-17.
Yeah, that's what I said. Some not so
not so memorable. Yeah, this was for me. I still don't get it. I still watch those Super Bowl clips of Super Bowl 30 wondering how the hell did Neil O'Donnell throw those passes to Larry Brown. I still don't get it. The Cowboys, the thing that bothered me was the Cowboys were dominating this game early, and then the Steelers started coming back to a point where they legitimately had a chance to win the game. They were running the ball well, the Dallas defense was tired, and then Neil O'Donnell just mistaken Larry Brown for Louis Lips and threw two interceptions. And the Cowboys scored. The 10-point win by the Cowboys is not indicative of how close that game was in the fourth quarter. The Steelers surprised the Cowboys with an onside kick that was brilliant. It was Cowher's first Super Bowl. Dallas wins their third in 4 years, establishing their own mini dynasty. And Barry Switzer won his first Super Bowl. He took over for Jimmy Johnson, and the Cowboy machine kept rolling along. That was at Tempe Sun Devil Stadium in Tempe, Arizona. That Super Bowl. And it was kind of cool because it was a little nostalgic. The teams had met twice before in the 70s. They still had a rivalry, even though it was kind of being faded off. So it was kind of cool to see it. But it was a weird game. Again, you saw the Steelers coming back in the game. Then Neil O'Donnell throws these interceptions, almost to a point where you could, if you were conspiratorial in nature, you could think something was not right. Like some nefarious force was on Neil O'Donnell. Like they were threatening his family or something. Because it was so bizarre how it wasn't just missed timed routes. I mean, there was really nobody around Larry Brown when he threw those interceptions. It's just really bizarre. The other Super Bowl that was held on this date, it was in 2001, and this was another forgettable Super Bowl in a way. This was Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Baltimore beating the Giants 34-7. This is the night 2 years ago I told Trent Dilfer congratulations on winning the Super Bowl. He had no idea it was the anniversary of the Super Bowl. Remember when I told that story? And I was blown away that a guy like Trent Dilfer was not going to get a lot of opportunities to win a Super Bowl, didn't have it like tattooed on his body, and didn't make his family celebrate it every single year on this date. Like, seriously, if I was Trent Dilfer and I won a Super Bowl, my family would be celebrating this every single year. Every year. What day is it, kids? Super Bowl day, Dad. Yeah, you're right. It is. We're watching the film when you get home from school.
Oh, the lead up.
Right?
Wouldn't you like 2 weeks out? Hey, 2 weeks from now. Two weeks from today, kids.
Kids, what are we doing? Super Bowl day. Yep, damn right, Super Bowl day. We're going to watch me hitting Brandon Stokley with that touchdown. Yeah, that's right, we are. Super Bowl day. Thanks, Dad. Baltimore 34, New York Giants 7. Now, it wasn't Dilfer's show. It was the Ravens' defense. They were so phenomenal. They were phenomenal all year. They showed up. And can I just point out that this is the Super Bowl? Ray Lewis was the MVP. Remember where he was a year ago before?
Yeah.
He got arrested for possible involvement in a double murder. Remember the story behind that? And he was down and out, and he was in a jail, in an Atlanta jail. And then a year later, he was Super Bowl MVP for the Ravens. This game is significant in some level of Super Bowl history. It had back-to-back kickoff returns for touchdowns. In fact, that was the only touchdown the Giants scored in that game. When you talk about the New York Giants and the history of the Giants in the Super Bowl, and you say, name the quarterbacks that led the Giants to a Super Bowl, you naturally think of Eli Manning. You naturally think of Phil Simms. But not a lot of people kind of forget about Jeff Hostetler. And a lot of people definitely forget about Kerry Collins, who led the Giants to Super Bowl 35 into the pit where the Baltimore Ravens ate them up and won their first Super Bowl. I had to think that Super Bowl was heartbreaking for Cleveland. That was really Cleveland's team.
Yeah.
It had not been that long, and they left in 90 after the 95 season. It hadn't really been that long since that team left Cleveland. And the Browns had already been established. They were an expansion team in 99, but I got to think that kind of stung. a little bit. So those are the three Super Bowls on this date. Connor O'Gara next. What was Tennessee doing with the hiring of Josh Heupel? We continue with Wake Up Call.
We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll. We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
Marconi plays the Mamba. Listen to the radio. This is Throwback Thursday 1986. One of the more sadder Throwback Thursdays on this date, 35 years ago, the Space Shuttle Challenger exploded. The Tennessee Volunteers have hired Josh Heupel, and I thought yesterday, well, we got to get our man Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South to talk about this, because I think there's a lot more to this story and what the Tennessee state of Tennessee football is. How are you, Connor?
No, I'm good. I'm a little bit embarrassed to say your Throwback Thursday, it predates my existence on this earth. Is that
That's okay.
bad? Is that...
Sometimes it predates our existence on the earth. One time we went back to the 30s. So it's one of those things.
All right, fair enough.
By the way, Connor is on our Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. All right, it seems easy, right? It seems like the AD, the former AD at UCF hires the UCF head coach. But in terms of surprising announcements, in terms of the landscape of the coaching, where coaches are going and where you could get if you're Tennessee, how exactly do we put into context this hire?
I think perspective is important when you're considering what Tennessee just did. If you had the perspective like I did, which was Tennessee was likely to whiff on its first few coaches, and you thought they were going to end up having Kevin Steele be the sort of like interim coach, extended interim coach in 2021, then you look at Josh Heupel and you say, well, man, I mean, that's really impressive. This is somebody who's had three consecutive top eight offenses at the FBS level. We know his quarterback background with the likes of Drew Locke and Sam Bradford and Dylan Gabriel as well. So you would look at that and think, well, that's not half bad. And Tennessee, all things considered right now, they could do much, much worse, because if we're talking about level one violations, then that's not exactly an easy situation for a head coach to walk into. But I understand that there are people and a lot of Tennessee fans who thought to themselves, man, this is just not exactly what we were signing up for. When we're vetting the likes of James Franklin and PJ Fleck, we expected better than Josh Heupel, who isn't necessarily someone that was considered on the up and up because of what he's done the last 3 years and, you know, not necessarily having the best season that many thought UCF could have in 2020. But I think perspective is important to remember with this. And I think that we have to understand what Tennessee is at this point. They're not a program that poaches Power Five head coaches, despite what we see every single time they have a coaching search. They haven't hired a head coach with Power Five head coaching experience since 1977. That was Johnny Majors. He's a Tennessee grad, Tennessee legend. So we can put that to bed. Tennessee is not in the place that many still think it is, and it wasn't that attractive of a job, and that's why they struck out on as many candidates as they did, and you know, they ended up with Josh Heupel, but I still think it could have been much, much worse.
Yeah, this is something that is hard to do on the collegiate level is, you know, you can't, if you're an AD, especially a new AD hire, you can't get to the podium and tell the boosters, by the way, nobody wants this job that you think would want this job. So let's take that off the table. But at the same time, you want to present the coach as if he was the only guy we were thinking of.
Yeah, and I don't know how much that matters. You know, you go back to Florida a few years ago with Dan Mullen, and very, very similar situation where Scott Strickland knew him very well, of course, from their days together at Mississippi State. And it was well documented that Dan Mullen was not the first choice at Florida. That was supposed to be Chip Kelly. It was supposed to be Scott Frost. That didn't happen, and Mullen goes into a situation where, despite the fact that it's his former boss, he knows that he wasn't priority number one, and it'll be interesting to see that relationship. But from Josh Heupel's standpoint, the timing kind of makes sense, because this is somebody who had a buyout of $3.5 million and who has watched his record get worse and worse each year that he's been at UCF. And if you're going to have a new boss and that buyout isn't necessarily, you know, what it would be at an SEC program, which now the vast majority of those buyouts are in the eight figures, then it would make sense to say, well, you know what, let's test the waters. Let's go to Tennessee, despite the fact that I didn't really have that good of a year at UCF. So, I mean, I think it's interesting to see that dynamic. And Danny White going to Josh Heupel, somebody who he not only hired but gave an extension to, is going to be something that would suggest that there's going to be some job security there, because it's going to take a bit. I mean, Tennessee is not doing anything in 2021. That feels like a foregone conclusion, but it's going to be one of those situations where you're going to have to kind of understand this dynamic at play and understand that there's a Tennessee fan base that hasn't exactly been known for its patience in the past.
Yeah, and also talk about that from a perspective. This is, I believe, the sixth coaching hire for Tennessee, or at least the sixth coach. You can go interim. You can throw the interim coaches in there as well, since 2008. But I started thinking, I can't imagine any other program that has had the variety of different ways coaches have failed in that program or have left that program, whether it's Lane Kiffin getting there and leaving after a year for his dream job, or Derek Dooley not working out, and now Jeremy Pruitt fired for recruiting violations. Butch Jones, who was kind of a good name going in, and him not being able to do it. It feels like it's a disaster. Is it a disaster?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It absolutely is. And all of this has coincided with Alabama's rise. And, you know, I think the conference is in such a different place than it was 20 years ago, where these expectations were lifted. And it's not a surprise, in my opinion, to see that all of these struggles coincided with the most dominant run we've seen in the history of this sport, and this desire to feel like you should be able to do that when you are going back and forth with Alabama. Then all of a sudden you see Alabama take this jump. There's always going to be that sense of, well, why not us? And, you know, as time slips away, you sort of look back at these numbers and you're like, my goodness. I mean, last, 13 years, Tennessee's 5-37 against its three biggest rivals, Alabama, right, Florida, Georgia. They haven't beat a top 10 team since 2006. Since 2006. I don't even know how that's possible. The expectations have to change at this program, because it feels like every single time we get excited about a Tennessee hire, it just gets spoiled very, very quickly. And Pruitt is such a perfect example of that, because it went downhill so quickly in year three. So I don't know what expectations for Josh Heupel should be. I think the upside would be like what Butch Jones did, which was have actual consecutive top 25 finishes, which wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I think Tennessee fans are finally starting to come around to that a little bit more.
How is, in terms of the other SEC programs that have gotten coaches, I think Shane Beamer at South Carolina, Brian Harsin at Auburn is probably another example of a group of five coach coming into the SEC. How have those went down with the fan bases in terms of those hirings?
It's interesting, because I think the Harsin thing, Auburn fans, after the mess that was that coaching search, came away sort of pleased from it, thinking, all right, this is somebody who actually has real group of five success, and Boise State is respected at that level because they've shown that they can beat power five teams. Now, there's a big question about Brian Harsin having 22 of his 25 years of coaching experience coming at Boise State, which isn't exactly a bike ride away from Auburn. But, you know, at the same time, I try and judge so much of this based on what they do from a personnel standpoint. And Brian Harsin has passed that test completely so far, because the hires that he has made for his coaching staff, a lot of which has been poaching Shane Beamer's staff,
right.
I think have really passed that test. I mean, you go out and get Mike Bobo, somebody who's at least proven that he can score points in this league. You go out and you get Derek Mason, who could potentially be to Auburn what Barry Odom was to Arkansas last year from a defensive standpoint. And I just think that Brian Harsin has done a really good job of surrounding himself with those SEC names. Now, Shane Beamer is somebody who I think South Carolina fans got more and more excited about as the search progressed. So it's kind of the opposite of the Harsin situation, which felt like it was very much, you know, oh, this is kind of a surprise. And I think that South Carolina fans have talked themselves into Shane Beamer because of what former players have said about him, the fact that he has worked with such a variety of head coaches. His head coaching tree is all over the place. And he's not necessarily just been a guy who's been entrenched on one side of the ball. And I think that's something that South Carolina fans are going to value. He's not going to be nearly as stubborn as a Will Muschamp was. So I think both programs right now are pleased with the direction of where they're going. But, you know, football changes those things.
Just from a perspective on Tennessee, again, there's could be some penalties coming down. It's the transfer portal is loaded as players are departing that program. If you're Josh Heupel, what's a reasonable expectation to sort of wade the waters and try to build something in Knoxville?
I truly think that if they go to a bowl game in year one, that'd be a
great. Oh my goodness!
Time.
Yeah, that's great. That would be.
I mean, that'd be fantastic. That would be a sign that this thing is actually working a little bit. And you know, part of that could be dependent on what happens with Kevin Steele, right? I mean, Kevin Steele has had top 20 defenses in the SEC for the last 5 years, and he's been really good as a defensive mind, and probably didn't get enough credit for Auburn staying afloat in the latter half of the decade with Gus Malzahn, but. I think that expectations have to be low. Their roster's just been gutted, man. I mean, that Wednesday night that they lost all those players where it was like, oh, you know, it got to the point where Tennessee had players announcing if they were staying.
Right.
That's how obvious it felt. So I still think it's such an uphill climb. He has to be active in the transfer portal. I'll be interested to see what he's able to do if he brings over some of those guys from UCF. I know that there are a lot of Tennessee fans hoping that he would bring over Dylan Gabriel. I don't know if the star quarterback from UCF is exactly waiting on pins and needles to get that call to come over to Tennessee after apparently there was some mix-up in communication, some lack of communication with Josh Heupel leaving. But I think he has to be active in the transfer portal for this team to have a chance. As of right now, the way that you look at them, it's going to be an uphill climb. This division is too good for Tennessee to just be able to sort of skate by with the roster that they're going to roll out in 2021.
Interesting stuff. Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South. Good stuff. Always love having you on, my friend. Thank you so much.
Yep, appreciate it.
You got a Connor O'Gara, again, on a Progressive guest line. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. Come back as we continue to go along with the wake-up call. One more thought on Super Bowl 55 and two participants that kind of have me kind of scratching my head a little bit next on Wake Up Call.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony B and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage has given away millions during Super Bowl 55 with the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Squares sweepstakes. See rules and enter for free at rocketmortgagesquares.com. So there was like an injury update on the Chiefs and the Buccaneers for Super Bowl 55, and they were like, all right, see if these are the guys that are kind of banged up. Let's see if their availability for the game on February 7th. And lo and behold, Antonio Brown is going to be available for the Buccaneers, and Le'Veon Bell is going to be available for the Kansas City Chiefs.
How does that feel?
Two-thirds of the Killer Bees of the Steelers are in the Super Bowl.
Does it sting at all? Okay, I'm just curious. I mean,
it's
I'm
a little bit because when those three were rolling, that offense was fantastic.
That was one of the greatest.
It was so good, and Antonio Brown got hurt in one of the playoff runs. He got knocked out cold, and that kind of derailed them in one of their years. They never brought it together in terms of a Super Bowl championship. And it kind of bothered me because it was really fun to watch. But it just goes to show you, remember, both of those players left on some, you know, really bizarre reasons, right? It wasn't like, well, the Steelers are kind of done with you. Good luck to you. I hope you find a home. And they just landed on Super Bowl teams. Antonio Brown, from the moment he decided not to show up for work in Pittsburgh a couple of years ago, where Mike Tomlin was like, go home. And he thought it meant go home forever.
Yeah.
And he missed, like, from that point on, Antonio Brown's career has been a circus.
Do you think that could work for us?
Maybe.
Like
maybe,
if we go to our, you know, if we go to our illustrious leader and go, you know, we're if he tells us to go home and we don't come back, that we can bounce around and end up, you know, someplace bigger and better.
Right, mate. I don't know, but apparently it worked for Antonio Brown. Like, that whole Hard Knocks with him in Oakland was crazy. I mean, it was one thing after another. Cryotherapy with the foot.
It literally was the only reason why you watched Hard Knocks that season was to watch him.
The helmet issue and the NFL said you can't wear. No, I will. No, I won't. Had the helmet problems and then
can't play.
Mike Mayock comes out and basically has to give a press conference as to why they're parting ways with Antonio Brown after zero games. And then he goes to New England and he plays one game and they have to cut him because there's an accusation of sexual harassment against him. And he's okay, so he's out of the league for a while they do an investigation. And then Brady goes to Tampa, invites him. He's going to play in the Super Bowl, for crying out loud.
Yep.
Like, you got to be kidding. Like, what a bookend to something that has been absolutely insane.
But,
now, Le'Veon Bell, not so much. He wanted more money. The Steelers don't pay a lot of money. He sat out an entire year on this cause. They sent him to the Jets. It didn't work out. He landed with the Chiefs. But even he's had, you know, some controversial issues along that path.
Yeah, my favorite thing during the time during his holdout was when he went to go play a pickup basketball game.
That's right.
YMCA in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Fueling the fire like, oh, Le'Veon Bell's coming back.
They got an agreement. They're going to work out a deal. Because remember when he sat out, they said, oh, how long are you going to sit out, right? You're not going to sit out very long. Like, eventually you're going to want to get paid. Eventually you'll just come back.
Yeah.
He was like, nah, I'm good.
But see, that one feels more normal.
That like, does feel normal.
Antonio Brown, he was unhireable.
Unhireable. Like, literally a year ago. A year ago at this time. If you had said Antonio Brown's not playing one more game ever again, you'd be like, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Not a shocker.
Not a shocker. But if you went, in a year he'll be in the Super Bowl. You'd be like, oh, come on. With who?
Yeah.
With who? Because at this point, we didn't know where Brady was going to go. We didn't know where he, you know. Just crazy, crazy sports world. It's nuts. Congratulations to Bell and Brown. 2/3 of the Killer Bees. Enjoy the Super Bowl. All right, Jake Asman Show's coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow. Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.